off the ball breakfast.
Oh, it's easy to sit here and say my team and have it ripped apart. What about your team? Where's your team? Come on. At least I'm putting my head above the parapet here.
Live every weekday morning from 7:30 on your smart speaker. Just ask Alexa to play OTB Sports Radio.
US Sport.
On Off the Ball.
With 888 Casino. 18 plus cgamblingcare.ie.
All right, this week's episode, there's just myself and Cian. Cian, how are you?
I'm good. We had another doubleheader Monday Night Football, though, and I'm still not really sure how I feel about this.
Because they go on too late and there's too much to talk about, or because it just stretches out the endless amount of football?
No, because I'm still very confused about the logic behind it all, where you put two games on basically at the same time, so no one watches either of them, I guess. And even last night, you had the Manning cast on, and they had Scott Hansen in to do like a pretend red zone for a while. But it was like one of those games is kind of a bit dull, and the other game is, well, the other game was obviously quite exciting and finished, and was a bit mad because the Chargers were involved. That's always the case. But it just feels like it takes away from the Sunday slate, to be honest with you. Add an extra game into the 4 o'clock window. Keep that bulk there. Keep it all great. But I guess we're trying to get more and more primetime games. So the NFL chasing money and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, that's it. Different markets, big viewership figures on a Monday night when there's not much competition. Whereas Sunday night probably is still some new TV shows being premiered, and I think, you know what, we can have it, try and get some LA viewers. Anyway, let's talk about the actual football itself. Where do you want to start?
Well, last week we were talking about how it takes 5 or 6 weeks for things to come into shape, and I feel like that's happened now with the MVP race. And I know it's a little bit early, but it's always kind of interesting to get a look in and get started on it. I'm kind of biased, and it won't surprise anyone to know that I prefer the quarterbacks do get this award. My simple reasoning with that is quarterbacks are the most important position. It's the most difficult thing to play consistently well each week, and it has the most impact out of anyone. And I think it's kind of a fascinating situation right now, because I have four guys down here, and the first one is one that I generally wouldn't have been a fan of over the years, but you can't really deny how well he's playing so far this year, and that's Jared Goff with the Detroit Lions. Like, Goff, inside that offense, he's a perfect fit in it. He's making lots of plays that he wouldn't have made previously from a physical perspective. I'm not saying he's turned into some fantastic athlete or anything like that, but he knows how to move within the pocket now a lot better than he did earlier in his career. You saw that, I think it was the Jameson Williams play or the Amon-Ra St. Brown play, rather, over the middle yesterday, where he stepped up past an edge rusher on Sunday, He stepped up past an edge rusher and delivered a strike over the middle of the field. And he's making plays like that throughout the whole season. He had a couple of fumbles he was lucky with yesterday, and he missed a big throw towards the end of the game. They still managed to win. We'll talk about that in more detail later. But I think his consistency and his overall week-to-week just carrying that offense in a way that he didn't previously, I think he deserves to be mentioned up there.
Yeah, I think almost everybody else who we're going to talk about briefly here are the people you would expect to. The thing is, if he is going to win, they are obviously going to have to end up, because the voting closes the weekend of the championship game, is that right? It goes all the way up to, it's at the end of the regular season. It's obviously a regular season award, but I think the voting is open even a bit beyond that. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe the voting closes and they just announce it then the week before the Super Bowl.
I think that's it. I think it closes at the end of the regular season and then they announce it.
Okay, so they basically need to essentially have home field advantage, be the number one seed, if Jared Goff is going to come from being somebody who was given away as a contract dump to MVP. But having said that, here's the thing. The narrative is what will carry him. If they were to finish, and we just woke up this morning to the news, Jameson Williams is going to miss two games. Was there any evidence he was on PEDs? Certainly didn't come out in his performances. But anyway, that aside, if they were to finish as the number one seed, I can see easily how there would be a groundswell of votes for this recovery comeback story. Everybody loves that.
And it's also setting up, like the other guys I want to talk about, and we'll get to them in a second. But oftentimes you do get an MVP where it's like, okay, this is the best team in the league, or not even the best team in the league. This is the team with the best record in the league. Who is the guy we have to give it to on that team? And it's going to be Goff. And for a simple reason that, one, what I talked about at the start, where he's the quarterback, but it's also because of how they spread the ball around and how everyone on that offense contributes, there's not going to be one superstar player there. For example, if the Vikings finish this year, and I don't expect them to, if they finish this year losing one game, it's probably not going to go to Sam Darnold or anyone else. Like, you can't give it to Brian Flores, obviously. That'll go to Justin Jefferson. And it won't necessarily be because Justin Jefferson was the best player, but not because he's the most valuable player, he's obviously the best player there. But he'll stand out because they force-feed him the ball a little bit more than anyone else on that Lions offense gets force-fed right now. Like, just yesterday's game, Jameer Gibbs had two touchdowns. Sam Laporta made a bunch of big plays. Brown made a bunch of big plays. Like, they're just spreading the ball around. So I think it would be kind of a team MVP award, but obviously it has to go to an individual player.
So if things continue as they have been so far, though, it will just be going to the quarterback on the Kansas City Chiefs, right? I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe we should stop talking about these awards and just wait until somebody else wins it.
Well, the interesting aspect of this for me is the Chiefs are 6-0, and like, they obviously beat the 49ers this weekend. It wasn't really a game that kind of stood out to me watching it back. But they're 6-0, and no one's really excited about them. No one really feels like they're better this year than they were last year, with Rashee Rice being gone injured, with Travis Kelce still not looking like a star player at all. Like, they're throwing to backup tight ends, they're throwing to wide receivers who we've all written off over and over again, but it's working. But the really fascinating part is, no one feels like Mahomes is playing that great either. Like, he's doing a lot of very, very good things. And it's just highlighting that having the best quarterback in the league, having the best head coach in the league, which is what the Chiefs have, they have both of them. Having the two of them together erases so many problems everywhere else. So if it does continue like this, if they do go unbeaten, and even if they don't go unbeaten, although I kind of feel like, because we're so bored of Mahomes winning everything, they will have to go unbeaten for him to win this award this year. But even if they're one game or two games, no one can really be mad at it. But I don't think it'll be remembered as this great season or this great award, especially not in the context of the seasons he's going to have in the future and the seasons he's already had. So,
to the point where we've already made this, that it's a regular season award, I feel like Lamar Jackson, to win it again, is going to have to win a Super Bowl, so that everybody will feel like, oh, we can't give you this award just because you might end up crapping out in the playoffs. And that's what he has to go through before. He may well be the best player in the league. He might well put together the best season, but unless they're like clearly number one seeds, which is going to be tricky enough for them to do, and then everybody feels like he won't somehow betray them in the playoffs, which I don't think he has done, by the way, but that's just the narrative. I suspect that that's going to cost him a number of votes.
Well, this, funnily enough, because we always talk about with quarterbacks like Lamar that they get these unfairly high standards, but that's kind of been the history of the MVP award. That's not like an exclusive thing to him, is it? It's, if you keep doing it in the regular season, we do start to be skeptical of you. And even just winning once, like even like Joe Flacco winning one, that bought him so much. Like, if he didn't win that Super Bowl, let's say they just lost a close game in the Super Bowl, he might even be out of the league right now. It just buys you that little bit of belief, that little bit of backing, and Jackson doesn't have it yet. And like you said, it's kind of this impossible catch-22 situation. It's like a paradox or whatever the right word for that is. He has to win this award, he has to kind of win the Super Bowl first, and the Super Bowl's in February, and the award's been given out in January. So, but you can't really, like, he can only control what's in front of him right now. He can only do what he can do. And the 5 touchdowns last night, 0 interceptions, the plays he was making, and like, I'll talk about it now. I woke up this morning to watch back that game and I saw the box score and it was like Derrick Henry ran for over 160 yards. Lamar had 5 touchdowns with no interceptions. I think he ran for about 50 yards as well. That's all must have been a really easy kind of blowout game. But in kind of typical this version of the Ravens fashion, it was kind of a very hard work style blowout. It was a game where they were making a lot of big plays, but those big plays are coming from behind the down and distance where his offensive line was getting beaten too often. Patrick McCarry at left guard was particularly problematic. He got sacked twice on back-to-back plays to kill their first drive. Nearly happened on the second drive. They threw a deep touchdown from 2nd and 17. At one stage, they had so many penalties. They got down to 1st and goal from the 8-yard line, and they had 3 penalties in a row, 2 offensive holdings, 1 offensive pass interference, and they wound up with 2nd and goal from the 38. They almost had 2nd and goal from their own half. I've never seen that before, and that's a game where they comfortably won and blew the other team out. And it was in large part to Lamar being incredible, to Rashad Bateman having a...
Oh, just having a bit of trouble with Kian's line there. I'm hoping that this is automatically going to restore itself in just a second. If you were unfamiliar with what happened, the Ravens beat the Bucks 41-31 in that game last night. And he's just detailing there it had very many elements of a blowout until 2 late touchdowns from Tampa Bay ended up making the score a little bit more acceptable. The big takeaway from the Bucks' perspective, Chris Godwin dislocated his ankle in one of those horror dislocations that the cameras cut away from. So he's gone for the season. And they say that Mike Evans is potentially also going to
I disappeared for a while. Where did you lose me?
You're back there. I'm lost you in the middle of the blow-by-blow how the game went. I was just updating everybody else. The other news is that it looks like Mike Evans is injured and might now end up on IR as well. So I think you can stick a fork in the books after those injuries to them.
Yeah, and the problem, the way they lost that game, like, they were getting the pressure that I was talking about there with Lamar, and like, they were still not making those plays throughout the game, and they needed to do that because they weren't getting a good pass rush up front. And then when Baker, like, they were actually in a really good spot before Baker's first interception, and the first interception came after it went to Marlon Humphrey in the end zone. It came after a perfect touchdown pass to Mike Evans that he dropped, and like, that kind of changed the direction of that game. Then the second interception is just an awful, awful decision, and it kind of killed him, and it took any sting they had in their offense out, and it looked like they were just going to go in the wrong direction for the rest of that game. That's kind of been the mark on Baker, though.
I was just going to say, they're at 4-3. The Falcons are 4-3. The Saints are 2-5, and the Panthers are 1-6 in their division. So maybe they just trade for one of those wide receivers who's out there at the moment and try and muddle through to the playoffs and hope that Mike Evans' hamstring comes back in time for him to have an impact, and they can replace Godwin, who was leaving anyway at the end of the season. I know he's been in incredible form at the start of the year, and has a great connection with Baker. So maybe I shouldn't be saying stick a fork in the books just yet.
But was winning that division really anything worth being proud of?
It's like the NFC. Playoffs.
Remember back in the day, remember 15 years ago when it was like the NFC West was that division and everyone was like 4-5, and then was it the Seahawks went to the playoffs at 7-9? Yeah, they had the Marshawn Lynch Beastquake and all that kind of stuff, and it was a bit of fun, but it didn't really do anything for them long term, did it?
But nothing does anything for anybody long term unless you actually win the Super Bowl, as we've established. And honestly, so your only hope if you're an NFC team is that somehow there is a rampage in the AFC, which they all take each other out and they kill each other to the point where they're absolutely exhausted by the time they get to the Super Bowl. And then the Lions or the whoever, right? So you would actually have a hierarchy, and obviously the Bucs are very unlikely to be there. But otherwise, what's the point playing out the rest of the season, you know?
It does reach that stage, but I guess it comes down to how healthy Evans will be eventually. And like, if he's fully healthy in time for the playoffs and fully effective, and he stays that way. Because I think the other thing with him is he's an older receiver, but he's also a big-bodied receiver. And those guys, like, he's actually a great outlier. The fact that he's been this effective for this long, him and Anquan Boldin are kind of the only two. Because those guys get so many more hits because they're so much bigger, because their joints carry so much more weight and all the movements they have to make, they tend to slow down quicker than everyone else. And if the hamstrings start acting up, Evans might suddenly be not necessarily ineffective, but not be able to be the superstar player that you expect him to be.
No,
but yeah,
Todd,
look, from their perspective, you're 100% right. Todd Bowles, like, they're all the players there could be cut next week and have no career. The head coaches there could be fired next week and be gone from the league very quickly. They've all got to fight for a playoffs. They've all got to make as much moves as they can. But from the outside looking in, you're just like, ugh, this all feels a little bit... Like, I was watching, and a couple of other games we're going to talk about. This, so far this year, more than any other year, to me, it's felt like we've got three divisions within the NFL. You've got like the really, really bad teams like the Titans and the Panthers. And if they play any of the other teams in the other divisions, it's just going to be a pointless game. Like the Titans game against the Bills this weekend and the Panthers game against Washington, who went in with their backup quarterback and murdered them. And if they play each other, then it might be a bit of a competitive game, but it probably won't be a very high quality game. Then you've got like this middle section of teams that are like the top 25 or into the top 7 or 8, or maybe actually just top 10 or 11 or 12. And those teams are all very, very close packed together as well. But then when you get, like, for example, I guess the Steelers, the Chargers, teams like that would be in there. But then you get to the top groups and it's like, oh, these guys are producing really, really high quality games. They're playing really well and they're not all that far away from each other either. So there's teams like the Packers and the Texans who played each other at the weekend, the Vikings and the Lions. And then we had like the Chiefs and the 49ers. Those are all kind of in that group. So maybe from my very pessimistic situation, or maybe because I don't have to sit and watch the same team every single week, I can change and flick between because I'm not following any individual of them. I sometimes kind of feel like, all right, those teams at the very bottom, I don't really care. You do what you want. You go figure out your long-term players that you're developing. But competing and trying to win games now, it's just not going to happen for a lot of you, is it?
With that in mind, obviously one of the teams who it is going to happen for are the Lions. You've already said Jared Goff is a potential MVP. He is performing at a level that is that high. And yet they still have a coach who is proving to be unreliable in terms of the analysis that the opposition is doing. Oh, we've got this figured out. We know what he's going to do under any given situation. He's like, no, you don't. I'm keeping you on your toes. And you've got to admire him for that, right?
It's like, Dan Campbell came in and he was like such a joke, such a character. Like he was his South Park character essentially. And He's been, we could all say we were wrong about that, but we weren't wrong about that. We were right. He is an absolute lunatic. The thing is, it's just worked. And at the weekend, he wanted to remind us that, like, guys, I'm running this beautiful offense. I'm getting the most out of these defense that's a bit depleted. And we'll talk about Aiden Hutchinson in a while. But I'm doing all this and I'm getting the results. But just to make sure you guys don't continue to trust me, I'm going to do this insane thing at the start of the game where it's 4th and 7 in your own territory and he's trying to do a fake field or a fake punt. And it's a fake punt that he actually tipped off that was coming because he came out with this formation that no one ever uses on punts, where he had two of his gunners on the left side and he had a motion in the backfield. And you're just going, this play had no chance of ever being complete, ever working for you. You're trying to run a speed option to the outside where one player carries the ball and pitches it to the guy outside based on what the defense does with two guys who've never run speed options before. So he just basically gifted the Vikings a 7-0 lead, and then they got another to drive afterwards. It was another gift. It was basically a 10-0 lead. And he was like, I'm going to play this on a high level of difficulty. We're going to gift you a 10-0 lead and then we're going to come back and beat you anyway. And sometimes you kind of go, is he doing all this stuff on purpose, or is he just a savant football genius who sometimes just is a little bit also off the reservation when we need him to be fully focused? I think the real question is, if he didn't do all this stuff, would the team be less good, or would they be actually be better? Because maybe this is kind of part of the fun that's energizing the rest of the players that they don't know themselves, and it kind of puts a challenge to them as well. We'll never know, obviously, but for the most part, it's working for them, so you can't really criticize it, even though it's absolutely insane.
Yeah, that division, the Lions are 5-1, the Vikings are 5-1, the Packers are 5-2, and the Bears are 4-2, and you would think, I don't know if we've had one of these yet, where the whole division goes to the playoffs. Has that happened yet? But this is as close a year as we're going to get.
But, yeah, because it couldn't happen before. But now we've got the extra team in the playoffs and we've got the extra game in the season. There's more opportunity for it. I'm sure that'll happen at some stage.
Like, they're not far off it. The worst team are the Bears. Are they better than the Bucks, the Cardinals and the Eagles, who are the other teams in second, who are bidding for wild cards? Not to say that they won't improve, right? Fair enough. Or maybe the Bears rookie QB falls off a cliff halfway through the season. That's, you know, these things do very much happen. But the top three who have 5 wins, they all look good. They all look capable of defending and attacking. And that's kind of all you need to be a playoff team at the moment.
Yeah, and the Vikings were right there with them. So let's. I know they gifted that early lead, and then but at the end, the Vikings had the opportunity to run the clock out. They were kind of gifted a fumble at the end of the fourth quarter from, was it Montgomery going off the left, and that was brought back a bit, and then they got the score to go ahead. So the Vikings as a team, they're so good. You kind of sometimes you get the bye week at the wrong time. You've got all your momentum built up and then you come out and you struggle after the bye. But they didn't struggle. They lost the game, but they lost the game to a very, very good team, and it was a very tight and close game. If they got one more possession, you could very easily see Sam Darnold go and win it. I think what will bother them is they gave up a little bit more pressure than they should have in critical moments without Aiden Hutchinson there. It was interesting because when Hutchinson goes out injured, obviously, the first thing you're going to be watching next week is, what's the pressure like on the opposition quarterback? How often are they getting pressure to him? But also the level of pressure. Now, I know that sounds like the same thing, but it's not, because what stood out was when they had clean pockets, it was oceans of space. It was as much time as the quarterback wanted. When they didn't have clean pockets, it was still just one guy getting through. It was one block being blown, or it was a blitz where they were actually making up for it by giving up easier matchups in the back end. So Aiden Hutchinson's absence might not necessarily have shown up in how many sacks they had or how many pressures they had, but you could very clearly see it in how comfortable Darnold was. The mistakes that the Vikings made were self-inflicted. They were throws decisions that Darnold made that weren't good. But again, that's not we were talking at the start of this year, he's going to collapse himself, he's going to fall apart. It wasn't like that. Darnold still came back and made plays after those mistakes. So I'm very, very few concerns about the Vikings and very few concerns about the Lions for the most part moving forward. And just very thankful you had two teams like that that are so much fun. You have Aaron Jones running in a 38-yard touchdown with his first touch of the game. Then jump forward a couple of quarters, you've got him running this beautiful crossing route to beat a defender in man coverage. Yeah. And that's your running back.
Yeah, he was very good. That pass was great to him as well. The Packers-Texans game, briefly, these are good teams. Both two good teams.
Yeah, and I think what really stood out in this game is they're two really well-rounded teams, because I didn't think that previously. I thought the Packers were kind of suspect on defense, but they actually showed up really well, and they got into CJ Stroud's thought process a lot. He was hesitating. Maybe he's missing his wide receiver one, but I don't think that's the case. Like Tank Dell, there was a couple of plays that Tank Dell could have made that he should have made. He had a bad day, but for the most part, it was about the Packers creating pressure. It was about the Packers playing tight coverage. And then on the other side of the ball, which you expect it more from with the Texans defense, they were able to get pressure on Jordan Love consistently too. But the beauty of this game, and why it felt like a playoff game to me, it wasn't a situation where one side's on top and they stay on top. It was one side was having big moments, one side was having bad moments. Jordan Love was making a spectacular play against the pressure in his face, a throw into a tight window, and then the next moment he was misreading the coverage and putting the ball up for grabs, playing kind of like a cross between Brett Favre and Aaron Rodgers at the moment. That's not necessarily positive because it was leading to a lot of turnovers and erratic play, but for the most part it was like two really high-end quarterbacks and two teams that kind of matched up perfectly to create a really competitive and good game, and it was just really, really, really enjoyable to watch.
And you'd have to assume that the Packers will get better as he gets further and further away from the injury that he had. Russell Wilson made his debut for the Pittsburgh Steelers. It was a much more efficient performance than maybe we might have expected. It looked like he was done the last time we saw him, and maybe a change of environment where he isn't this big dog on a massive contract, where he's been humbled by having Justin Fields drive him and actually look pretty good in spots, has changed his outlook, and maybe he's gone back and started to be the incredibly hard worker that he was when he was a third or fifth round pick, whatever it was, all those years ago.
Yeah, I think Mike Tomlin's very thankful for how this game went, because there was an opportunity for Mike Tomlin to take a lot of criticism here, because Justin Fields, while everyone acknowledged that Justin Fields was not setting the world on fire, he was also not playing so poorly that it was really hurting the team or it was forcing them to make a change. So Tomlin put his trust in a quarterback who he saw as the clearly superior starter and the clearly superior option for his offense. And now, for the most part, I don't think there was a dramatic difference between Wilson and Fields. There were a lot of plays where Wilson didn't make something happen where Fields had previously. But the big detail and the big key to it was he's just more composed as a passer. He's more composed as a decision maker than Fields. And the connection with George Pickens is going to be vital for them. Like Pickens had two deep ball receptions in this, and he drew a defensive pass interference downfield as well. So essentially he had three, and he had a touchdown catch over the top of the defensive back in the end zone too. And the key difference between Fields and Wilson is when Fields throws the ball, he's generally trying to rocket it and throw it really, really hard. Whereas one of Wilson's best traits throughout his whole career is that moonshot ball. It's a pass where you purposely put a really high arc on a ball and you place it on a line just by the sideline because you've got a bigger receiver than the cornerback who's trying to cover him. And it just turns it into a situation where the receiver has more time to use his body to box the defender out and adjust to the ball in the air. And Wilson understands this. So it looks like a 50-50 ball, but it's probably closer to a 75-80-20 ball where it's in the wide receiver's favour. Fields doesn't really know how to throw that pass, and that opened the offense up, and it was critical for winning this game against the Jets, although maybe the bigger part of winning this game against the Jets was the quarterback on the other side of the ball rather than the quarterback playing for the Steelers.
Well, go on, what do you mean? As in, he's done?
Oh, he was awful. He had those two interceptions, and you can blame the receivers. I don't know how you're going to blame the receivers because both of them were touched by defenders first. I know that one of them looks like it was off of Garrett Wilson, but it actually the defender undercutting that tips it onto Garrett Wilson, which is why it doesn't go off his hands and goes off his shoulder. But Rodgers is just nowhere close to what he thought he was. The Adams trade had no real impact. Adams had, like, the biggest play Adams made was tackling Beanie running the ball back to stop the touchdown, and touchdown eventually came from that anyway. So they're just not addressing the problems that they have. They've been pointing fingers in the wrong places, and it's going to continue like this. It's amazing they have won fewer games with this Aaron Rodgers than they did with Zach Wilson last year. Like, that's crazy.
Just on the Fields thing, like, from Fields' perspective, obviously he's disappointed to come out of the team, but actually maybe a couple of years developing here at Pittsburgh under this coaching ticket, who is going to be there forever, it turns out, isn't the worst thing for him. He's still only 25, right? Like, he has a lot of experience. He's got the highs and lows, and now he's got a little bit of time where there's no pressure on him. But if there is the opportunity, he's going to be more ready as a result of having had this experience. So, like, one of these quarterback reclamation projects that actually makes a lot of sense, and when he's 27, 28, develops a bit of that touch. I'm not saying it's going to be as good as what you're describing Russell Wilson has, but it's not beyond the bounds of possibility that he could use his lavish athletic talents and now start to pick the brain of somebody who can do that kind of role that he never had at Chicago.
And the best thing for him is that he came in here and is basically guaranteed he's getting another chance. If it's not in Pittsburgh, it's somewhere else. Because when you fail in one spot, you generally got to play well in that second chance, because he's done enough over the last month to say, guys, like, there's enough here for you to work with. And coaches love that sentence, for you to work with, because all coaches believe that they can do more with the talent that's available than the other coach who had it previously. I think as well, like, he definitely showed growth. Like, he's still in his, what, is it, this is third, fourth year? He definitely showed growth with the Steelers and what he was doing. He was playing closer to his skill set in terms of running the ball and running for touchdowns, but he was also just making better decisions and showing better poise in the pocket as a passer. So there's definitely positives there, and I wouldn't be kind of, like, if I was looking for a backup quarterback or a quarterback to develop, Justin Fields would probably be pretty high on my list, because he's also not going to cost a lot if he comes away from the Steelers.
Geno Smith's 34, by the way. Like, so there's plenty of time if you have the skill set and you stick around and you're willing to learn before you actually make it.
The only thing that actually bothered me, and this isn't necessarily a negative reflection on Fields, it bothers me more about the situation of it. In the interviews this week, he was talking about, like, how he wasn't good enough and talking down on himself. And I kind of felt like, after the month you've had, after all the criticism you've taken over your career, you should be standing there, and I'm not even making a big deal of this, it's just something that stood out to me. You should be standing there and being like, yeah, I can play in this league, I showed it. I've got the talent to make plays. And moving forward, when I get the next opportunity, I'll be ready to do so. But I guess he's also got to be deferential to Wilson taking over as a starter. So it's not a major deal, but it's kind of one of those things where just like, you don't need to be kind of going down on yourself now at this, like this.
I realise this is a bit apples and oranges, but Ross Tucker has tweeted in the last hour or so, Saquon Barkley makes 53% of what Colts wide receiver Michael Pittman makes. He makes over $10 million less than Calvin Ridley and $7 million less than Brandon Cooks. And if they were giving out, MVPs for a single game, you'd be like, this guy, he's the best player in football. Now, the revenge game narrative, very important, no doubt. But Howie Roseman does it again is the narrative.
Yeah, but like, I mean, that was one of those ones that was kind of obvious too. Everyone knows how good Saquon is. Saquon's just a victim of what era he's in. If he was here 15 years ago, actually, he probably wouldn't be making any more money. It's just everyone else wouldn't be making more than he is currently making the way it is right now. Like, that's kind of why, you know, in America right now, there's all this kind of drive of tell your kids to become baseball players, tell them to become golfers, tell them to even become basketball players, because they make far more money than NFL players and they don't get all the concussions and stuff. The running back is, like, really so... such little value in it now, and Saquon is the greatest example of that, because look how good he is. Although then again, like, is Saquon making more than, you might be able to check there in a minute, is he making more than Christian McCaffrey? Because I think McCaffrey's probably still making more than him. Saquon's on that level though. He'll never get the credit for it because he played all those years in New York with Daniel Jones limiting him, and I'm just glad he got that revenge game, because realistically he wasn't treated very well there, which is kind of a crazy thing to say about someone who was taken high in the draft and obviously made a lot of money there, but he was never really set up for success, and he kind of took a lot of the blame when the offense was bad. He never really deserved that.
McCaffrey seems to be on a higher deal certainly now. It's just over $13 million a year that Barkley's getting, and McCaffrey signed a 4-year 60 something million deal with the Panthers, which has subsequently
been the same though.
It's subsequently been reworked. And I'm fairly sure that they just paid him the money and he held out for a little while at one point and then they paid him more. So $16 million cash for McCaffrey this season and $13 million for Saquon.
Yeah, not bad. I'm sure they'll be doing okay in their lives. They'll be happy out.
Yeah, but like, I do think that it's interesting if you have one of those absolute superstars, and even Derrick Henry, the difference that he's making to the Ravens, to their ability as a team to be able to do stuff, it probably is undervalued. Like, the difficulty is you pay the money and the Achilles pops or the calf goes and you're looking at the money going, you're nothing but wasted money. Like, I presume go on.
My thought on this, and I think it actually benefits everyone, I don't think running backs should come out of the draft on 4-year deals. They should come out on 1 or 2-year deals. And they should come out on 4-year deals, but they should have markers based on 1 and 2 years where they can renegotiate their contract after year one or after year two. And this helps everyone because, one, running backs who are 23 and 24, they can sign bigger contracts. They'll get more money per year because teams are less concerned about them being worn down. And it also helps the teams because teams are less likely to pay a free agent running back out of desperation. Like, for example, if Saquon Barkley had hit free agency, not even hit free agency, but been allowed to renegotiate with the Giants after his first year instead of his second year, then you'd be getting those prime years locked in. Whereas in the current setup, we're treating every position the same. And a running back is the same way an inside linebacker, because of all those car crash hits they're always taking. Those careers, they need different points of re-signing contracts than a quarterback does or a wide receiver does. And it's kind of a more complicated, larger thing to dive into and figure out. But it's something needs to change there, because I don't think the way it's set up right now helps anyone.
Let's fly through the rest of the stories. Deshaun Watson did his Achilles. You could actually see it on the telly when it happened. And I guess karma is a bitch for the Cleveland Browns.
Yep, and they're not getting out of this. I know there's all talk about insurance and all that kind of stuff. The insurance will cover some of the money. It'll create a small bit more cap space, but you've got Deshaun Watson on your team for the next 3 years, and enjoy him because you deserve him.
Yeah, there's not really much else to say beyond in one of our groups, was a Bleacher Report were suggesting that they are taking calls, or certainly people are ringing about Myles Garrett to see if there's any possibility that he might be out there. If you're Myles Garrett, but if you're Myles Garrett, you're definitely
those reports.
You're thinking about that, right?
Well, oh yeah, but Myles Garrett's got no say in it.
well, I mean, you say that, but they do. They can say, like, look, I want to go, and I'll be unhappy, and I'll be a bad presence. And you signed Deshaun Watson. Largely, the owners have managed to cook it up in the face of one of the weakest player body representatives that you're ever going to see, and they have control of the contracts. But if he was to decide to say, I'm done here, you need to let me go, I don't think it's impossible is what I'm saying.
No, it's not impossible, but I always find those reports to be funny, because it's like all these teams are calling and asking about Myles Garrett. It's like, yeah, they probably can always call and ask. It doesn't mean the Browns are actually entertaining any of this. But if Myles Garrett was to be traded, so let's jump into the world where that actually does happen and it is an opportunity. I don't know how you figure out what the compensation is there, because to me, that's a player who's probably at least 2 first round picks. And that sounds crazy, because he's a defensive end and a pass rusher. He's not a quarterback, and he's not even an offensive player. But that's how good he is. So if it's starting at 2, that means the Browns will probably want more than 2 for to actually move him on. Because you're talking about a player who's probably still entering the prime. He's still entering the prime of his career. He's not. Yeah, that to me is like the next 3 years for him could be defensive player of the year, defensive player of the year, defensive player of the year.
29 just after Christmas, so.
Actually, yeah, he's probably not worth anything. So
getting old, you know.
Hey, let's not start calling 29-year-olds old. We can't be doing that. Neither you nor me can do that.
In professional sports, it's in American football, it is veteran is how they would talk
about
that. Well,
the thing is, I just feel bad for Myles Garrett, just because he's going to spend so much of his career on this Browns team, which is always the joke of, oh, you got drafted to the Browns, it's terrible for you. But even his iteration of the Browns, like, this is the worst Browns team, I would say, ever. And you had, like, not by record, not by stats and all that kind of stuff, but by
the reception. The 0-16 and the 1-16. We're not going to go 0-16. I'll swim in the lake. And it's like, next thing, cut to footage of the head coach swimming in the lake. And they're like, what are you doing?
Look, we laughed at those teams. This Browns iteration, all of the stuff they came out with after the Deshaun Watson trade, all of the way their fans acted when they thought he was going to be good, the statements that were made, the simple matter that they traded for him at the time when they traded for him, when all of us know what he's been accused of, know what he's been alleged against in the court cases that have been settled, or the civil cases that have been settled, all of that kind of stuff. The respect that the Browns as a franchise have lost in recent times, to the point that people will openly deride them. And then you have Jameis Winston in the locker room standing up for Watson. It's like, which is about as bad as a defendant you can have next to you, considering what he's been accused of as well. Like, it's just, it's an embarrassment. It's a shame. Is it Marseille that we've got in football in France that were doing the same similar thing? No, get out of here. I don't care about the football aspect of this. You deserve everything you're getting here. Anyone stuck with that franchise deserves to go.
From a football perspective, they're not the worst, but in terms of human beings, I agree. They are definitely the worst. And there's a long litany of previous teams who had murderous rows on them. The 49ers, the injury news is that Brandon Ayuk, after his holdout and the massive contract they gave him and all the drops he's had for the first 6 weeks of the season, has now done his ACL. So you'd have to say, in terms of good business decisions, that's one of the worst that they've made. Javon Hargreaves done for the season. Christian McCaffrey has yet to play. There's some talk he might be back after their bye week. Debo Samuel has pneumonia. George Kittle is injured. As somebody said on Instagram, their fittest wide receiver is the guy who was shot a month ago. They're like, this is the textbook definition of a hangover from a Super Bowl defeat, right?
Yeah, it's about as bad as it comes to it, because the 49ers are top heavy as well. Like, it's a roster that's built on the five or six superstar names, especially on the offensive side of the ball. And also Dre Greenlaw isn't back yet, so we haven't even mentioned him. So they're a top-heavy team, and when you're a top-heavy team and you get injuries to your first two stars, people say, oh, you still have that other star, you still have that other star as well. But like, now all of them are injured. But even if all of them weren't injured, it's much harder for you as a team, as a franchise, as a roster, to make up for those injuries than it is for some other teams, because you're built for that top-heavy nature to have those guys to rely on. That's where your money's gone. That's where your draft equity has gone. So I'd be very, very surprised if they do anything in the playoffs. They'll reach the playoffs. They might get to play the Buccaneers there, and they can all set up well. They can all celebrate just being there, and they can have a party that you might appreciate. Well, but the one that kind of gives you some bit of hope is that McCaffrey might come back. That Purdy played probably the worst game of his career yesterday. He hasn't done that for too often. You'd expect him to bounce back. There's talk of them trading for Kendrick Bourne, who will be effective. But like, even the Deebo Samuel thing, like, if you've been watching him for the last few weeks, if you've even just seen pictures of him, you kind of knew something was off. And then you hear about him having pneumonia and whatever the other aspect of it was that was mentioned. It's just like they feel a bit cursed this year. Nothing's going right for them. The kicker got injured. Like look at all the stuff that they're trying to do that just won't happen for them. And yeah, it's a Super Bowl hangover as the worst as I can remember since... Was it the Packers who won the Super Bowl years and years ago? It was Aaron Rodgers' only Super Bowl win, where they had something like 15 starters on IR or something like that.
At least they won. It does seem like they haven't recovered from the cosmic shock of the defeat. Are the Chiefs going to go undefeated?
I'm going to say no, but I'm surprised they're 6-0. So it's like, how do they keep doing this? What's that Breaking Bad meme? How does he keep getting away with this? That's what it feels like with Mahomes. It's just like even the game at the weekend, like, it's just like you're getting the ball to McCole Hardman still. You're trying to Noah Gray. Like, you've got Kareem Hunt back in the backfield running in touchdowns for you. How? In 2024, how is this working as well as it is? So until they lose a game, that's the dumbest sentence ever, but until they lose a game, you're going to have to try and believe in it, because it just looks inevitable at this stage. And it kind of feels like maybe it's something that Mahomes and Reid have come together and gone, let's do this, let's make sure we've already won all the Super Bowls, let's get to that regular season record as well.
Except they don't look very good.
Yeah, but that's besides the point.
Okay, I would take the field. I think they are going to get beaten. And then is Tua coming back? Is that on our list?
Tua's talking about coming back. The interesting framing of it, he did a press conference. He said he's not going to wear one of the Guardian helmets. He's expecting to start this weekend, which is kind of always what we expected to wait to come true. But the framing of this was interesting because the report said he hasn't passed concussion protocol yet. And I'm kind of going, maybe it's just the way it works that when you're placed on that short-term IR that you don't do the concussion protocol while you're in that. But I would have assumed he's gone through all the concussion protocol tests and stuff like that over the last few weeks and be ready to go. But they said he hasn't passed concussion protocol yet, but he's expected to start this weekend. I'm going to go, that's surely a contradiction. How could he not have passed that yet? It's been a month since he got hurt.
They must know that he's going to pass them then, because they've done some baseline testing, or they've done some testing versus the baseline. Should we briefly mention Drake May? It looks like he's decent, even though they are terrible.
Yeah, and it's a situation where the Jaguars went down 10-0 and May played well and he was throwing the ball over the field. And my reaction to it was, the Jaguars are, I didn't expect them to be great, but they shouldn't be 10-0 down to the Patriots in London after being there for the week and the Patriots after flying over. And ultimately, it course corrected as the game played out. Like, the Patriots are a worse team than the Jaguars, and it wasn't May's fault. He made a bunch of plays that reiterated that he's got a lot of talent. He's got that top end athleticism. He's got that top end arm talent. I expect, just based on how he played and based on how the Patriots are set up, that he might have some really, really bad games over the course of this year. But I don't think it will necessarily be an indication of how the rest of his career is going to go, because it's just the situation they're in. I saw Bill Belichick reacting to, was it Gerard Mayo calling his players soft and calling his team soft? And Belichick's reaction was, those are my players. Those are players who were great against the run last year. That's not something that should be said about my players. They are definitely not soft. They may not be getting results right now, or they may not be the greatest players right now, but they definitely shouldn't be called soft. And that would actually concern me, because with Mayo there, like, if anyone who remembers Mayo playing, he was a grisly beast of a linebacker. He was someone who hit you and you felt it and you remembered it. And whenever you've got a young quarterback who needs development years and who needs that time and that patience, and you've got, like, not necessarily a Mike Singletree, but like Mike Singletree is the greatest example of this being a linebacker who just like became a head coach and didn't seem to understand that you have to be a bit more nuanced on the offensive side and a bit more delicate with the quarterback. So that would be my only concern about Drake May right now in terms of his own play. Not everything looks good. Everything looks kind of like what we expected it to look like.
All right, King, good stuff. That's this week's episode. We're looking forward to the rest of the season, which is basically a procession for the MVP race and Super Bowl. No point in watching the games or playing them anymore. See you next week.
According to me, anyway.
US Sport.
On Off the Ball.
With 888 Casino. 18 plus. See gamblingcare.ie.